Are you good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, beautiful.
Yep.
All right, welcome to Security Guy Radio with Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
Gary McCracken.
What's the name of your company?
WinMagic.
And what do you do for them?
I am VP of technology for WinMagic for the last 10 years or so.
Scientist. You're the guy. You know what's going on. All right.
Yes,
tell
exactly.
us what you guys do.
Well, we protect data at rest.
Data at rest. Okay,
so
that's interesting.
That's using encryption.
Right.
Started out doing full disk encryption, software full disk encryption for laptops and desktops.
So that's the data on your computer that resides there.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the thing about full disk encryption, as opposed to other types of encryption, it encrypts everything, the entire hard drive or SSD.
Down to the BIOS and way down at the...
Well, not that far, but but including the operating system.
Okay.
So Windows.
So what is the benefit of that?
Well, first of all, an attacker can't come in and mess with Windows or with the operating system because it's fully encrypted. So it protects against malware injection attacks and things like that.
Does that mean that the Windows technician I call who can't fix it can also not mess with it because he breaks it every time I call the guy? Seriously, every time I call him to fix something, they break it. Mm-hmm. Is this a little different? And she's the brains and I'm the human element, right? So is this a little different than most encryption? You're saying you protect the data where it is, which is different than protecting it in transit. We hear a lot today at Black Hat about data packs coming and going. That's not
right.
what you're doing.
Right. So there's three types of data. There's data in motion,
right,
which is the use SSL and things like that to protect. There's data in use, and that's when it's actually in the memory of the computer.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And there's data at rest. So the primary and the original use case is the last laptop.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when you shut your laptop off, you put it in the back of a cab, and you lose it, somebody opens it up. If it isn't encrypted, then you have a Windows password, but you can just take that drive out and slave it to another computer, and you can look at all the data.
Well, we used to do that when we did forensics back in the day. We started doing that.
Yeah.
And, it would just open up and you could use it. And we used to use PGP, pretty good privacy.
Right, exactly.
That was it was
look
a big pain.
Look at you
in
the terms over
well,
here.
Well, we used it way back in the day, see, because I got my gray hair.
Yeah.
You probably weren't born when PGP was invented.
Yes, I'm aware of them.
But it was a little, we could do it through emails and things, and it was cumbersome. But for super-duper secret stuff at the studios, we just had to do it. And once in a while you lose the key, then you're not in luck.
So that's what's evolved over the last 10 years that I've been with the encryption game. It's gone. The encryption itself has become a solved problem. It's we have our own FIPS-approved cryptographic engine.
Okay.
But the operating system, BitLocker, also has an option for encryption. And the best place we think it should be done is actually in the self-encrypting drive itself. Most drives, the SSDs now, come with hardware built right into them that
can
encrypt.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Now, sir, does yours supplement that existing?
Well, the
or
thing
it's
is
different.
The thing is, say, for instance, with a self-encrypting drive, while it's encrypting all the time, it actually provides no confidentiality because it's completely transparent. You have complete access to it unless it's managed.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh.
So
if I'm using it, it's encrypted, but I can see it. But if she walks up, she can see it.
Yeah, anybody can see it.
It's encrypted to an outside attacker, maybe.
Well, not really.
Oh, no. Okay.
But unless it's unmanaged, the only real benefit you get is if you want to dispose of it, you can do a crypto erase, and all the data will be completely gone
erased
and unaccessible forever. But until you manage it, you don't get the benefit of confidentiality. So that's what we do. So our software comes, and whether it's BitLocker, our own encryption, or self-encrypting drives, comes and provides the authentication. Could be your password, smart cards, multi-factor authentication.
Right.
And once you have that authentication, then you have to be the real user, and there are many ways of doing it, and that cryptographically reveals the key that then can decrypt a drive. And whether that, and again, for self-encrypting drives, once it's unlocked, and then it becomes transparent.
So help me with this one. We hear a lot about the hacks that go on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we hacked the system. It's really not easy to hack a system as much as it's easier to find the key and just unlock it. Is that more what happens? In other words, it's hard. You can't really break encryption, can you, technically?
Well,
unless you had a Cray computer and ran for 1,000 years or something, isn't
well,
it?
Well, when you look at something like AES 256-bit encryption, it would be like a 1,000 times the length of the universe or something like that.
Yeah, right.
So that's not the weak link in the chain. The
right.
weak link in the chain is the... The
access to the access to the keys,
right.
How they're managed,
and maybe it's protected with in the end with a password or even a smart
yes.
card, and those things are orders of magnitude less secure than encryption. So that's where people would attack.
So how does your company handle that multi authentication better than somebody else? I mean, what you still got to get the end user to do it. Do you set some kind of standard that says, listen, you can't get into this and access it once you encrypt it unless you're going to give me three ways, you know, you know, something you are, something you have, or something. Yeah.
So, for instance, how we improve, for instance, BitLocker, which is a fine encryption engine.
Right.
But it really lacks the authentication.
Exactly.
Typically with BitLocker, it starts up, there's a TPM, a trusted platform module in the machine, and if the TPM is there, it boots and it automatically unlocks and goes to the operating system, and then your only protection is really the operating environment, that username and password, and there's lots of ways of bypassing
that. Yeah.
So what we do is with our authentication in front of or on top of BitLocker, then we change it from a device level to a user level. And the user has to type in either their password, which we enforce password quality rules, or even better, multi-factor authentication, where they have a smart card or.
But you don't force them to the multi-factor.
They don't. They're not.
Now, what about biometrics? Are y'all moving in that direction?
Yes.
We've had a lot of discussions with a lot of practitioners that biometrics is that next layer of defense.
Well, for the consumer,
they're dicey about it, though. For the consumer,
things like fingerprint are very convenient.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about facial recognition or proximity, where you just happen to have your phone.
I think that's a good one. If you have that, it acts like the key to your front door because it's near you. Yeah. I like that one.
So maybe something like a proximity card and a password, and then when you step away from your computer, it automatically locks because you're no longer in proximity.
So these solutions are here today.
Yes.
Is it really the consumer doesn't want to use it? Is that why it's not out in the forefront and being sold?
Well, I think they like fingerprint. Personally, I find that when I swipe my finger and I get it all good, and you know, a month later or something, I have to re-enroll. So my fingers my fingers just keep changing. I guess humidity or something.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a problem I have.
And I have low tolerance for that kind of thing because I'll do it once or twice.
Exactly.
But I'm not if I have to reconfigure it every month or two. So I'm not personally good for fingerprints, but I think others do, and others don't have problems with it.
What do you think about this? I think if we forced these things on consumers, they're not going to like it at first, but eventually they're going to come on board. If everybody's phone had a fingerprint on it, oh my God, what problems we would solve, right? I mean, just think about what would go away just because of sloppy use of your phone. Somebody leaves it there, you pick it up, and you know.
Yeah, I think that the challenge with encryption on the consumer end is that they really don't understand it. And so what they don't understand, they don't adopt easy. But if it's built into the laptops, you got the BitLocker already there, it's already on, just click a button. But if you're putting added layers of security on it, they typically tend to shy away. Yeah. Versus your organizations that kind of like it's their culture, it's their policy.
Right.
And they force it upon the employees.
Well, you know, the thing about encryption, especially full disk encryption, is that it's ideally completely transparent. That you can do anything that you can do on an encrypted computer as on an unencrypted computer.
Right.
And there's just that one level of authentication. Now, we can do things to make that authentication more transparent. For instance, there's something called pre-boot networking. So before the drive is unlocked, the operating still is still encrypted, then the computer can connect back to a central server, and the central server can participate in the authentication.
Oh, I like that.
Maybe transparently.
Yeah.
It can go, they're coming in, we've checked that they're coming in from a computer with the right trusted platform module, they're maybe with the right IP address.
Perhaps your network node or something.
Right time of day, whatever, and say, okay, this person, based on the policy, it's probably a desktop inside a secure area or something like
right.
that, then we'll supply the key, and then that machine can boot up. And then so the user has no extra work to do at all, but are protected.
Now, is this theoretical, or
no? This is
people working on it.
This is a product that we have now.
You have it now.
We call it pre-boot networking.
All right, I got to get that for my computer. I just bought an $8,000 HP. You know,
these things
are on the space station, right? Literally, and I got to get it locked down. So this sounds like an easy thing for me. I'm with you. I'm go, and if I have to slow down for 5 seconds, it frustrates me. So I want something that's seamless and just friendly and gets it done, though, you know.
Yeah, and exactly.
Yeah.
Now, that same kind of technology is even more important for something like an ATM, which we have software that protects the content of ATMs,
right.
Or in the cloud. So when you have a virtual machine running in the cloud and it's a server, there isn't somebody there that's going to type a password in when the thing boots up.
Yeah.
So with our cloud VM product, when it starts up in the cloud, it connects back using this network, pre-boot network, PB connects back to the server. Ideally, the key server is on the customer's premises. Use the cloud, you put your data in the cloud, do your computing in the cloud, but do the encryption in the cloud also and keep the keys yourself. That way you keep control.
That makes sense, I guess, yeah. And sitting in my office at home, who's going in there and who's going to try and... I turn my computer off when I'm not using it, so it's not connected. I do all kinds of things. Give me some extra time.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure, you know. Now, is this a product that goes down to a level like myself, a teeny business that, you know, wants to get in the game and start early while I'm growing, or is it more enterprise-level stuff?
Well, we do have an e-store, and you can go and buy our product at the e-store. But honestly, it is probably more oriented towards enterprises and SMBs.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's because of the infrastructure, the management of the keys and the servers.
Yeah. And I couldn't afford it because I'm too small. But someday, I think eventually it's going to come down. It's like anything. You start up with a $5,000 TV, and now they're $300 because it works in the market and everybody adopts it. It comes out great. Now, where are you guys out of? Where are you located?
We're located in Mississauga, which is near Toronto in Canada.
I knew it. You know why?
Why?
What did I tell you when I went to IC West?
I don't know.
I went to IC West last year, and I think I did like 15 shows, and 14 of the companies were from Canada.
Oh, good.
Canada has the best stuff. I don't know if it's because they have a lot of... You know, 6 months of darkness, and they got to say, what am I going to do? Let's invent the next great thing.
Do some more coding.
Well, there is something about that, right? Mm-hmm. In certain hemispheres, there's more production because it's snowing, you can't go anywhere, right? Yeah, very interesting. No, seriously, Canada does make really interesting products. So give us your website.
www.windmagic.com.
And your name and title again?
Gary McCracken, VP of Technology.
Gary, thanks for coming on Security Guy Road. It's been a fascinating conversation.
All right, thank
thanks
you.
A lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll have you on a 60-minute show, maybe. That'd be great.
Excellent.
Okay. Very interesting.